This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm so excited that you're joining today. We've got a really great guest today and a very interesting, intriguing book. We're talking to David Toomey today about his latest book, Kingdom of Play. It's all about the insights of animals, playtime. What does that mean? Why do they do the things they do? And David will obviously tell us all the insights of that, and we'll also pick his brain a little bit about writing of this book, as well as just writing in general, because he is definitely a scholar at that. So it's going to be a fun show. Always interested in animals that play and why they play, so it's going to be exciting. So everybody hang tight. We'll have a chat with David Toomey here in a moment. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Join us now is author, and he's also a professor of English at the University of Massachusetts. Teaches creative writing and writing skills, so he definitely is a scholar and a teacher and a craftsman at his work. Of course, we're going to be chatting with David Toomey. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here. And I love the book and the concept and idea of the book, Kingdom of Play. And you know, on the cover, it talks about octopuses at play and bouncing balls, and why do monkeys do belly flops and flips and mudsliding elephants. It sounds cartoonish, but this is the things that they do in life. So tell us a little bit about the book, Kingdom of Play.
Sure. Well, I can tell you how I started or came upon this idea. It was accidental. I read around a lot of different stuff in different scientific journals. I happened across an article that said that scientists had no overarching theory of why animals play. They had ideas about maybe training for adult behavior or socialization, but there was no single theory that explained it all. And that came as a surprise to me. And I think it may be a surprise to a lot of people. I mean, I think ask most people why a dog plays or spends so much time playing or a cat plays. And many are going to say it's training for adult behavior or it's socialization and social animals. But it turns out that that is the case sometimes, but it is not the case all the time. There are animals that there have been long-term longitudinal studies with animals, like a famous study of meerkats, that those squirrel-like animals in South Africa. They're very social, they're very playful, but the ones that played more in their youth did not become more social. And some animals that play more in youth aren't better at the adult behaviors or when they become adults. So those two ideas that are almost commonsensical and I think widespread ideas really don't answer all the questions. Animals seem to play for those reasons, yeah, but other reasons too. And the book explores all these reasons and a lot of animals. Of course, I think we all know dogs play and cats play and a lot of mammals play. And I think most of us know birds play. But I think it's a surprise to many that reptiles play sometimes or seem to. Turtles seem to play. Even fish play. And last spring, there was a study that showed that bees play. That is a fascinating test of I think it was 40 or 50 bees in a chamber and given a choice to get to a food source, given a choice to walk straight through an empty chamber or through a chamber that was filled with bee-sized wooden balls. And a lot of the bees went for the balls and played with the balls, rolled the balls around for a while before they went for the food. Why did they do that? How does that help them, you know, as adults or socialize? It just doesn't seem to. And you might say, and a lot of people talking about this book have said to me, well, can't they just play because it's fun? Isn't that enough? And yeah, but evolution is harsh and natural selection is harsh. And natural selection selects against wasteful activity. If you're playing, you're spending energy, that you could be doing something, more directly helpful to living or producing offspring. And playing seems beside the point. So evolutionary biologists who try to figure out why animals do what they do in terms of evolution, why evolution would want animals to play. That's an, or why specifically evolution would want those bees to be rolling around the wooden balls. Evolutionary biologists think it's got to be more than mere fun. This isn't to say it isn't fun. I don't mean to sound like a spoil sport, but there's more going on there. And I think that's what's really interesting.
Yeah, I think the key fact, you know, like you said, you know, we know our domesticated animals fairly well. They want to play, or at least they want to please us. So that's why we buy a plethora of toys and pull toys and for dogs and, you know, catnip toys for cats, et cetera. But it is definitely fascinating the fact that it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, virtually every animal out there, I mean, we're talking insects, reptiles, you mentioned mammals, et cetera, they all play. And there is a reasoning behind that. So in the book, was it, first of all, surprising to you to find out how many, if not all, animals play? And then did it want you to dive into it even more to say, okay, is this more just pure evolution? Or is this a skill set to the bee who pushes the ball the furthest, is the strongest? So, you know, mating purposes, et cetera. Did it make you want to dive into it even more to try to determine why this happens?
Yeah, I mean, there were so many surprises as I went through the book. As I said, the first one was scientists don't have any overarching theory for all of it. And then there were all these other little surprises as I went further and further. Range of animals that play. Octopuses play. Some fish do this weird kind of pole vaulting where they fish jump out of the water for a lot of reasons. And some scientists have a handle on a lot of them. But sometimes some fish seem to do it just because it's play. It seems to be fun. So yeah, that's a surprise.
Through the playtime, you know, when we look at it from a human standpoint, we play because it's fun. But we also play because we're told that it's good exercise for us. So it's going to help our physical being. And then it's good mental stimulation. So it helps our mental mind. And then we also hear through training, whether we're talking about zoos, aquariums, sanctuaries, any type of training, that, you know, they like to give enrichment, as they call it, you know, little toys and balls and whatever it may be. Is it a combination? Do you feel it's a combination of that, like we learn as a human, that yes, it's fun, but yet we're doing a lot of this because it helps us out physically and mentally? Or is it just, you know, can it be just pure fun?
I'm a kind of a have your cake and eat it too kind of guy.
Yeah.
I think it can be pure fun. I think it can also be good for your development. And I think that's where a lot of these evolutionary biologists who study play come down. They don't, these don't need to be separate categories.
That's it.
And a lot are going to say they shouldn't be a separate category.
Yeah, I love that. And I guess it, you know, it goes back to, obviously, you're a historian and scientist, and you like to delve into that and are very skilled at that. But on the flip side, for those novices like myself, I sort of take a look at it as, okay, what's the importance of knowing that? We know now they play. And a whole plethora of animals, virtually every animal, if not all animals out there, play. What value does it bring? I'm not saying it doesn't bring value, but what, in your mind, value does it bring for us to say, okay, we need to delve into this a little bit more and understand why this is happening? Because to me, the book completes the fact, you know, just from a face value, is the fact that you found out more and more animals play, and you delved into every animal and how they went about playing. And that was satisfying as a reader for myself, without knowing, you know, the ins and outs and whys of why it happens.
Well, I think it does a lot of things. I mean, this knowledge does a lot of things for us in a purely selfish way, with us humans being selfish. It does show us that play is pretty important to us, or should be important to us. We should take play seriously, to put it bluntly. I think this kind of knowledge is also important for understanding animals, and non-human animals, I should say, because I include us
in that
big category. The more I read about animals and animal minds and their experiences, the more I fail to see a real separation here. They're doing things we do. And if you look at a couple of squirrels in the backyard who are tussling and probably playing, you can't help but think they're having an experience of fun. And it's not so different from our experience of fun. And thinking of that, it just makes you just amazed at what non-human animals, who maybe we should be thinking more about, what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit it spot on right there. And the thing that popped in my mind, you mentioned the squirrels tussling. Could it be, more than play, or is it just simply play? How many humans actually spend the time, like you did, investigating that, being interested in that, and just stopping long enough to see the squirrels tussling? That would be my first question. Then the second is, do you think squirrels stopped and wonder why we're doing the things that we do?
That second question, that's a great question. I'm not sure I've ever thought about that.
Because I would imagine, like you said, there's parallels in what we do. They do the things that we do, vice versa, I would be assuming. I know they think we're crazy at times and probably wonder why we're doing some of the things we're doing. But yeah, it makes me wonder, do they actually stop and think, well, what is that all about? And is that a play activity? And if so, is that something I should be doing?
Yeah, I can't speak for squirrels.
Come on, somebody's got to stand up for the squirrels.
Let's change the animal here. I think dogs do. Yeah, dogs absolutely know when you're playing and not playing and when you stop playing. They know what humans look like when they're playing. And that does, I do talk for a bit about cross-species play, which is something a lot of people really weren't expecting to happen either. That's kind of a surprise.
Yeah, expand on that a little bit, because I thought that was fascinating as well. And the fact that, like you said, dogs learn from us and we learn from them. And how's the cross-species playtime take effect?
Yeah, it may be. I mean, the human history of dogs is fascinating. I mean, it's a 50,000-year history. And we domesticated dogs, perhaps from wolves. Nobody is ever going to know. But in a funny way, they domesticated us too, because they make eye contact with us. Wolves don't, chimpanzees don't, but dogs do. And a dog looks at you and says, I'd like to get out of this room. Would you open the latch on the door and let me out? You're probably going to do it. And why are you going to do it? Because the dog has domesticated you.
That's very good. I love that. The communication, with that nonverbal communication in particular. Yeah. Well, is that because the domestication of it, do you feel that that connection and us knowing what our dogs want without them saying a word as we know it, do you think it's because we have spent so much time with them that we've learned each other, not only just the visual parts of what our dogs do, but really connecting at that deep level? And perhaps if we spent more time with certain species, we'd be able to have that nonverbal connection and that domestication as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. I mean, and that's an interesting question. I mean, people do it with various animals, horses and humans connect very well. I don't know. I'm sure there are people with, exotic pets. You see people with boa constrictors and all that. I don't know how far you could get with communicating with them. In other words, you might be just too far away.
Right. And it's that fine line of, what's the scientific part of that, their mental capacity, their brain size, et cetera. Is that a block for us to be able to connect at that deep level? Or is the fact that we just don't spend that much time, where if we had, a love affair for lizards and we spent time, all of our time, free time with lizards, would we be able to connect with them and know when playtime is and vice versa?
Sounds like another show for you.
There you go. Or another book for you. So there you go. A little tidbit. I'll only take 10% off the top. Don't worry about it. A little hint there. All right, everybody. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but I want to continue our conversation with David Toomey and his book, Kingdom of Play. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's Talk Pets.
Let's Talk Pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with author David Toomey and his book, Kingdom of Play. Learning all about the playtime of virtually, if not all, animals out there. So David, when you put together this book, and obviously you've written other books as well that really get into sort of the history and the scientific mind and animals are at play there, was there an aha moment you had, or did you read an article, or did you hear something, or was there a light bulb went off and said, hey, I need to find out more about that and do a deep dive and write a book about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think in each of my books, that's happened. I'm a dilettante. I am somebody who is curious about a lot of things, and I know a little bit about a lot of things, but not a lot about any one thing. That seems to be okay with the publisher. So yeah, in all my cases, I just, the animal play, I just happened across an article, and I thought, oh, people have been doing a lot of research on this for years and years and years, but there's no popular book on it. There's no book for lay audiences on this. And who's not interested in animal play? And every time you tell something, everybody's got a story or more than one story. And this book, more than any other, people have just, you know, lit up. And they just, let me tell you about what my dog did last weekend. I saw these otters. And it was amazing. It is a subject I think everybody's interested in and would like to know about, you know, more formally.
Well, I think that's the fascinating thing. I always when I talk to people I know, my clients, et cetera, you know, they're always wanting to know more about their particular animals. You know, are they doing enough, not enough? What's play? What are they like? So on and so forth. For me, when I was looking through the book and you uncovering every animal out there likes to play, it's a great book for being able to not only read through the whole thing and learn more and really think about it, but also our favorites. We always have favorites that, you know, whether we're a dolphin fan or whether we're, you know, a chimpanzee fan, whatever, otters is one of my favorites you'd mentioned. You can turn to a section, virtually any section of the book, and learn about most of your favorites and why they do the things they do. So I thought the book did a great job of that. When you put together the book, how did you come to a stop point? More than just, okay, a publisher said 250 or 300 pages in the book, but how did you know that, okay, I've delved into this and given enough information that the reader would be fascinated, interested in it, learn enough about it without going so deep that we're delving into, lack of better words, the deep end of the scientific research and the mindset of that?
Yeah, good question. Well, I'm fortunate enough to have a brilliant editor. She told me, in no uncertain terms, this is enough. You've got to move. You end the chapter here. You've done your job. Let's move on to another chapter. So, I
good.
It's her.
Shout out to great editors, because I find with a book, especially if you're really tuned into the story or the research or whatever it may be, it's very, I'm assuming you're collecting, you know, reams of paper, as we'd say in the old days, of notes and research, so on and so forth. And you've got to consolidate that down where you're keeping the reader interested and intrigued and entertained. But there's a certain point, like your editor said, you got to cut it off.
Yeah, editors are just angels sent to earth.
Gotta have editors for sure. Well, when everybody picks up a copy of the book, Kingdom of Play, well, let me retract on that. The book itself, writing it, putting it together, I know this was not an overnight project. So I can imagine the research that went into it. How did that process flow for you? And as a writer, what kind of writer are you? You know, are you a 5:30 in the morning type writer? Are you a 5,000 word a day? Do you write until your typing fingers are numb? How do you go about writing your craft?
Yeah, my relationship with my writing is probably unhealthy. But that's probably true of a lot of writers. I wish I could be really disciplined, but I think I'm like a lot of writers, and I'm best in the morning. So if there's a couple hours in the morning, maybe between 8 and 10, and my mind is clear, I'm going to produce something pretty good. So as long as I keep those hours, book gets written.
All right. That's good. That's good. Yeah. I found through the years, you know, there's no standard. You may have some similarities, these type of things, but it's all over the place. For me, it's deadlines. So cutting sure. down the stories without babbling on. And then when deadlines come about, it's like, it's not like how I learned in school. So as a professor, I'm sure you can appreciate that. David, when everybody picks up a copy of the book, Kingdom of Play, what do you hope they get from it? Is there a main takeaway or a thing that you're hoping they get from reading through the book?
Well, I suppose one thing I hope they get is a greater appreciation for the natural world, or the animals that we share this planet with. Curiosity, I think a kind of a childlike curiosity, I hope might be awakened in some people. And it would be nice, it's a pleasant thought, to think that a younger person might be inspired to begin a career in animal behavior or the study of some natural world.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. Start them off young and say, hey, the animals play. You play. Come on. Mm-hmm. Here you go. You got a career. Well, I think you did a great job with the book, as always, and you definitely accomplished that. So big kudos once again. Everybody pick up a copy of the book. Learn about why our animals play. Learn about what every animal does out there. Of course, the name of the book is Kingdom of Play by David Toomey. David, congratulations again on a great book, and I look forward to chatting with you some more down the road on the next book.
Thanks so much, Tim. I enjoyed it.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you got any questions, comments, ideas for the show, or people you want to hear from most, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com. And we'll entertain your comments, answer your questions, and bring on the people you want to listen to most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows and hosts. It's a cornucopia of fun animal fun entertainment. So it's at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life. And who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Everybody have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.